Education, please come to order. This is Friday, March 21st, 2014. It's 8 a.m. sharp, and in attendance are myself, Stephen Schering, Vice Chair Senator Dunleavy, Senate President Huggins, Senator Gardner, and Senator Stitt. We have a full quorum to conduct business. Today we're going to do, deal with confirmation hearings for the appointment to the two boards, the Alaska State Board of Education and Early Development and the University of Alaska Board of Regents, that's the student region. We're postponing a confirmation at the request of the individual being confirmed for appointment to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and that will occur on Monday, March 24th. So following today's hearing, the confirmation hearing will also take up Senate Bill 107, which is the K-3 student reading proficiency bill. So let's go ahead and jump right into it with the State Board of Education Early Development. We have Kenneth Galhorn from Kotzebue. Mr. Galhorn, can you hear me?
Brief fetties. Okay. I'll come back to order again. The commissioner has volunteered Barbara to
for confirmation. Thank you very much. Barbara Thompson from Juneau. Ms. Thompson, do you have any opening statements you'd care to make?
I may look familiar.
And if for the record, just identify yourself.
My name
sorry.
Is Barbara Thompson. I moved to Alaska in 1977, lived in Bethel, and moved around the state in different places and ended up in Juneau. I live in Douglas and have been here since 1981. I've been in the field of education for 31 years. And much of that time I was doing adult education, adult basic education and GED programs and teaching. And then I went to the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, where I spent 24 years in various programs and at various job, doing various job duties, and retired out of the Department of Education in 2008. I went to Denver to work at the Education Commission of the States with a former Education Commissioner, Roger Sampson, who was heading up that organization at that time, and spent 4 years down there. I did maintain my residency here and my home because I knew I would be back. I actually thought I would be spending only a year or two down in Denver, but it turned into four, and I learned a lot about what other states are doing policy-wise with education, as well as internationally, what's going on. So I don't know how much more you want to hear.
No, that's fine, Barbara. I appreciate that. I mean, if anybody knows where all the bodies are buried, you certainly do, and have had many, many years of experience. Thank you for all of that that contribution. I'm very fond of ECS. It's a great education commission of the states, and we learn a lot from that organization. Appreciate your service there, and with Roger Sampson as well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Any questions that members have or anybody has on from Barbara?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Barbara, welcome back.
Thank you, Senator.
Just briefly, why do you want to be part of the board?
Now that I am truly retired, in the sense that I'm not going to work every day, and I feel I have the time, and I certainly have the interest, and I have a varied background of state level, federal level programs, what other states are doing, international ideas about education, and I feel I have the time to commit and really be involved and get out there and listen and make good informed decisions. I think I would be an asset to the board because of my background. And that's why.
Thank you. Thanks. First, the board plays a very important role in education in the state of Alaska. Any issues you'd really like to concentrate on in your tenure, and particularly adult education, whatever it might be? Could you have any thoughts on that?
I'm certainly interested in pursuing and following through with all of the ideas that have been put forth about choice. I think choice, educational choices are good and are needed, and students and parents and the community need to be able to count on different different opportunities to either keep kids in school, get them back in school, or to get them the best education possible. The other area that I would like to focus on is teacher preparation and teacher education and certification. I think there needs to be a lot more communication with the university system. I think there are also many things we can learn from what other states are doing in these areas as well as internationally. Many people don't like to compare states to countries in what they're doing with their teacher preparation, but there are many things we can learn and do differently to increase the effectiveness of teachers and move current teachers forward. We have great teachers in this state. I'm not questioning that, but I do think the system for getting teachers into preparation programs and what they get while they're in them could help prepare them better for the classroom setting.
Yes, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. In 2009, for the then Commissioner Ledoux, you did a paper about Common Core standards, national standards, and while that may not be fresh in your mind, do you have any comments about pros and cons? Do you have any concerns about the state having adopted the Alaska Academic Standards, which is really an adaptation of Common Core?
Representative Gardner, the paper I did was to point out exactly that, pros and cons. It wasn't to take a side on whether or not to adopt. So it did show pros and cons and what other states were thinking of doing. I'm aware at this time that I think it's 46 states signed on or adopted the Common Core standards. But I do know that some states are backing down from that or looking at it again and revisiting the idea. I think what Alaska did was a good thing in that they did take their own standards. They did an exhaustive and what I think was a pretty comprehensive process for reviewing and updating and revising those standards within the state, not just adopting the Common Core standards. So I, from what I know of the process and the standards being compared to other standards, I think their rigor is high, and I think it was a good thing that the state took it upon themselves to deal with their own standards.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the questions. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. Type M certificate, as I recall, is for professionals that have a, let's say they are a welder or a carpenter or a auto mechanic, and they get that type certificate, maybe not going through the conventional system. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I was talking to some superintendents that mentioned a challenge they had once upon a time. And what I'm going to ultimately ask you is, would you think about this and then give us your recommendation in your future capacity, hopefully? And are there things we need to do to remove obstacles for type M type certificates? Because in this case, the way it was described to me, good person, it appeared the system was going well, but the collective bargaining process created an obstacle, which eventually the type M certificated person went away.
Oh. I would have to look into what's going on with the type M. I do remember type M's, and I know they were used often in certain areas of the school and oftentimes career and technical education. But I will have to look into that. I don't know if I have a recommendation, and I don't know if they have been revised since I was at the department. So I really need to look into that.
If I, Mr. Chairman, I mean, I guess don't limit it to type M. I mean, I've come from the school of thought of let's put the best that we can get, no matter what, given a good moral background in front of the students, working with the students so that we can have student success. So don't limit it to type M.
So noted. I hear you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions? Further questions of Barbara? Thank you so much, Barbara. It's great having someone with your years of experience and understanding, and you're too young to retire, obviously, so it's good that you're going to be involved or interested in being involved in the future of education. Thank you so much.
You made my day. I'm too young. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I say I'm too young, too, so. Thank you very much, Warren. Let's go on to, do we have Mr. Gallahorn with us yet from Kotzebue? We do not. We do, okay.
Yes, sir, good morning.
Good morning, Kenneth Gallahorn. Please, would you identify yourself for the record?
Good morning. My name is Kenny Gallahorn. I'm born and raised in Kotzebue. Married. Two girls in the educational system. One's a college graduate. Another one's a junior at UAA. I have served on the regional school board here in Northwest Arctic for a term and a half. I just had a real passion for all kids to succeed in our educational system. I'm very excited to be part of what I think is a time of change for our educational system. So I'm very excited for that. One of the things that I would like to see statewide, and in some areas we have it, some we don't, I believe, is some sort of a pre-K program and make it mandatory. I guess one of the obstacles is money, as with most things, I guess. But I think if we do that, we'll realize the savings and when we get the kids up to high school. Anyway, I'm very excited and thankful for this wonderful opportunity.
Thank you, Kenny. Great having you with us. What's the weather like here in Kotzebue right now?
It's beautiful. Probably about 10 degrees. Looks like it's going to be a sunny day. Yesterday was just gorgeous. Spring is almost here. It's a little cool, but spring is almost here.
Great. Glad to hear that. Any comments you'd have, Kenny, on reading programs, on reading issues, getting kids ready to read before third grade?
That's part of the pre-K program in my mind. It's science that proves if we start early enough, their minds are going to be ready to do things. Our minds are ready to do things. I mean, even at home, not just in the school system, but if we get them early enough, they're going to become great leaders. We have to catch them early for them to succeed early on.
Thank you so much, Kenny. Appreciate your comments. Any further questions, Mr. Gallahorn? I'm sorry, Mr. Gallahorn. No questions, Mr. Gallahorn. We appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Let's go on to Kathleen Yar. And Kathleen is from Ketchikan. Can you hear me, Kathleen?
I can.
Would you identify yourself for the record, please, Kathleen?
My name is Kathleen Yar, and I live in Ketchikan, Alaska, but I'm calling from Maui, where it's 6 a.m., and I'm in the bathroom of our condo so my family can continue sleeping, and I can have a light on.
Well, I think some of us have probably done that before. I appreciate you being with us this early in the morning, and thanks so much, Kathleen. Please, any comments you may have?
Any what that I may have?
Any comments you may have, opening comments, opening statements.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I began teaching in Metlakatla in 1984, and then I left and pulled out my teacher retirement and subsequently had to get back and got my master's degree. When I returned to Ketchikan in the southeast area, I worked in a variety of capacities at the Ketchikan Indian Community, which is the federally recognized tribe in that area. My husband, my family is Alaska Native. And finally, I ended up as the director of social services there. And from there, I went to the University of Alaska, where I was the coordinator of student services and did both academic and personal counseling. And also, during my time at the university, at a later stint, I was the PETA's recruiter of Native students who wanted to become teachers. And one of the great things about that program was we formed in each community FEA clubs, Future Educators of Alaska clubs, on the premise of trying to grow our own teachers. In addition to that, I've taught the GED to students while I was at KIC. As you know, it's a CERC program, but they were in transition at that time, so it was done at KIC. And we had the highest number of graduates of any time in the program. We had 61 people get their GED in only 6 months. So I have a long history of working with at-risk kids and trying to keep them in the system. I've got some pretty good ideas about that. And also, when I was working with the kids at the university level, I could see where their gaps were in their educational knowledge by the time they got to the university. And then also, kids who are ready to roll, they're ready for an APS scholarship, those kinds of kids. So it's a mix. You kind of look at your kid and then help them get where they want to go.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. Any questions of Kathleen? Kathleen, you touched on such an important issue of local Alaskans going into teaching. Any further comments you have on how we encourage Alaskans to become teachers, and clearly those folks to be more comfortable living in Alaska than outsiders? Any further thoughts on how we might encourage that through the Board of Education?
Well, I think that Governor Parnell is doing one thing he's been several good things, but this is one of them, is the technology program, where students who are in the brush can get the same math classes, for instance, from a highly qualified teacher that they may not otherwise be able to get, and then that would afford them the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And one of the reasons that I want to serve on the board is I really appreciate, my daughter is at UAF now, off APS scholarship, and this is kind of an opportunity for me to give back a little bit, because we appreciate that scholarship very much. It's a wonderful thing.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. Any further questions?
Questions of me?
Yes. Questions of you, unless you have a question of us, but we probably can't answer it. But anyway, we thank you very much, Kathleen. Thanks for calling in from Maui, and enjoy the remainder of your stay there.
Yeah, I'm going to get out of the bathroom now.
Yeah, right. Thanks so much.
It's so dark. It's outside. The birds are really rocking.
Well, it's nice and bright here in Juneau. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.
So, is there anyone who cares to speak to and under public testimony to any of these candidates we have before us? I don't think we have anybody online, nobody in the room. We'll close the public hearing and thank all of you who have been with us. Look for a motion.
Through the chair, I move to report that the Senate Education Committee has reviewed Kenneth Gallahorn, Barbara Thompson, and Kathleen Yar for appointment to the Alaska State Board of Education Early Development, and that the named appointees be forwarded to a joint session of the legislature for consideration.
Thank you. Is there any objection to that? For the record, forwarding the names of these individuals does not reflect an intent by any of the senators present to vote for or against the confirmation of the named individuals during the joint legislative session, and we will take a brief at ease. And if we could come back to order, please. We're next going to call on Courtney Enright for the University of Alaska Board of Regents. Courtney, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank you so much for being with us. And would you identify yourself for the record?
Yeah, my name is Courtney Enright. I'm originally from Ketchikan, Alaska, and I'm currently a student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
And just for the record, where are you calling from, Courtney?
Houston.
Okay, good. And I understand you're on spring break.
Yes, it's a little warmer here than it is in Fairbanks currently.
Yes, I imagine it is. Well, thank you so much, Courtney. Any comments you would care to make, opening statements on your appointment to the Board of Regents?
Sure. There's a couple things. I would note that, even though I'm currently a UAS student, I have attended UAA and UAS at different points during my academic career. And then, as I wrote in my statement, my primary goal with being on the Board of Regents as a student representative is to make it easier for students to move within our university system. I think we've made incredible progress in the last couple of years in making transferability easier, but I think there's still a lot of ways we can continue to work and make the student experience less cumbersome, and that's something that I'd really like to strive to continue to improve.
Thank you. And Corey, how long have you been on the Regents then? Help me understand that.
I was appointed in June, so a little over, 8 months now.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much. Any questions of Courtney?
I have one.
Yes, the Senator. Yes, Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Chair. Courtney, this is Senator Dunleavy. Do you view the university as three universities or one university? How do you view the parts within the whole and vice versa?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, that's an actually excellent question, and it took me a little while to grapple with it. But I view us as one university with three different parts to it. I know that there are three different accredited institutions, but I think that we really ultimately are one academic institution for the state of Alaska, and that we should act a little bit more like that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. What are your plans upon graduation?
I'm hoping to graduate in spring 2015 and get a job somewhere in the state, working eventually toward corrosion engineering as my technical master.
Great. Thank you very much, Courtney. Any further questions? Thank you for your service, Courtney. I appreciate your willingness to serve on the Board of Regents. And at this point, is there any public testimony? Anyone care to speak to this appointment? If not, we'll close that public hearing and go to Senator Dunleavy.
Through the Chair, I move to report that the Senate Education Committee has reviewed Courtney Enright for appointment to the University of Alaska Board of Regents and that her name be forwarded to a joint session of the legislature for consideration.
Thank you. And again, for the record, forwarding the name of this individual does not reflect an intent by any of the senators present to vote for or against the confirmation of Ms. Enright during the joint legislative session. Let's take a brief at ease to sign the document. Please. This has been such a typically Alaskan experience, hearing from people from Juneau, Kotzebue, Houston, and Maui. But that's Alaska for you. Yes. Senator, I'm sorry. Of course, Senator, you wanted to clarify something. And would you care to do that now? Or?
Oh, if now's the time, yes. When we passed out Senate Bill 100, was it Monday? I can't remember. And I indicated I had a legal opinion that it was constitutional. I spoke in error. I actually have had 23 legal opinions this year and got messed up, but I have a legal opinion that it is not constitutional. And I've asked my staff to transmit that to the members of this committee and also to the staff, to the chair's staff. And I just wanted to clarify on the record. I apologize for that.
Well, thank you, Senator. Yes, Senator.
Through the Chair, and it's not tit for tat. It's just a point of clarification. Did the review, did they say it was not constitutional or it's questionable? Did they absolutely say it was not constitutional? Because it hasn't even been put into law to even be tested for constitutionality purposes.
I believe our question was as written today. So, of course, it could change. Part of the opinion hinged around the language, which always concerned me, which is notwithstanding anything else. There was that one paragraph. But anyway, you'll have it in your email box probably now, but certainly okay. Shortly if you don't already.
Thank you. An important issue that we need to all appreciate your clarifying that and getting that information to us.
And, Mr. Chair, I might also, of course, these opinions are only opinions. Nobody knows for sure unless something is enacted and there's a lawsuit and it goes through the process. So,
thank you, Senator Gardner. Okay, let's move on to the bill before us, Senate Bill 107, version U. Tim, do you have that? Thank you. We have Senate Bill 107, version U, before us. And Mr. Lamkin, would you review the bill and tell us some changes we're considering?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you is Senate Bill 107, version U. This bill has been heard. I believe this is the fourth hearing on this subject matter. I just want to remind the committee and point out again that this bill is a function of a nationwide movement among several states to try to address the issue of students that are not proficient in reading by the third grade have great difficulty throughout the remainder of their academic career. This bill proposes to develop a reading plan for every single school in the state for every student that needs one. Currently, as you may know, we have in our rating system a five-star system for schools. And it's those schools that every year the department goes through a school performance rating index, and they assign schools 1 to 5 stars. In regulations, they define that 1 and 2 stars are considered priority schools and focus schools. And it is only those schools that currently have in regulation the notion of reading plans. So there was some mention on record, a prior testimony, that all of our schools and districts are currently doing this particular activity, when I don't believe that's entirely correct. Because again, only those stars, those schools that have 1 or 2 stars, have that type of level of intervention to introduce a reading plan at the school level. So this plan, this bill would propose that every school have a plan in place as we move forward. Now, there are several states and lots of research, Massachusetts, Florida, Colorado, Texas, I believe Iowa, just to name a few, that are already moving in this direction. And in fact, I believe they're ahead of us already. And indeed, our own state board is making motions in June. I believe they have a board meeting coming up to address this issue. Recently, you may have heard of a RTI statewide conference that was very well attended. It is indeed research-based for reading instruction. It's strong. It's evidenced in this bill, and it's an example of best practices. That's kind of summarizes the overall thrust of the bill, Mr. Chairman. As regards our last hearing on this bill, rather than produce a whole new CS, I thought I would recommend a couple of very simple changes to the bill, and that's in reference to page 9. I believe we can approach this conceptually if you wish. Page 9, line 27, as regards...
Page 9, line 27.
Of version U. That's correct, Mr. Chairman. There was discussion at our last hearing as regards support for mental health support, and it was recommended that where it referenced when necessary to instead replace that language with whenever practicable. And furthermore, on the line 28, when because there are instances, and particularly more rural districts, if a school does not have a school counselor, for example, or a psychologist, to instead referring to it as the school psychologist, to instead refer to it as a qualified school psychologist, social worker, so forth, to allow for, in instances when that does become necessary or practical, to bring those resources into the district on an as-needed and practical basis. Furthermore, and I think what really would help perhaps move the bill forward, as we have had conversations with the districts, because this does clearly require some more work, some reporting, paperwork, and ultimately more resources, to consider putting an effective date on this bill of to July 1st, 2016, so that it is a clear statement that is made that this is a priority of the legislature, and that it gives districts and our budgeteers time to figure out how to produce the funds and resources necessary to apply this new program. So my final recommendation would be to apply an effective date on the last page, would be line 28, a new line, a new section, section 8, it would have an effective date of July 1st, 2016. That concludes my summary of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I also have, or we have the Department of Education standing by to speak to the bill as well.
Thank you, Tim. Before we go to that, would you quickly review the two changes you've talked about on page 9 and on page 11? It's very, very clear, just adding July 1st, 2016 as effective date, line 28. But on page 9, would you clarify that once more so we all understand the changes that we're talking about?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, to make it clear, line 27 of page 9, subsection 4, would read, whenever practicable. And strike when necessary, add whenever practicable. In addition, on the next line, 28, where it says the school psychologist, to delete the and insert a qualified school psychologist. So it would read, whenever practical and with the approval of the student's parent, the student receives mental health support from a qualified school psychologist, school social worker, or school counselor.
Thank you, Tim. Senator Gardner.
It sounds like a silly question, but it's actually serious. Do we have school psychologists, school social workers, or school counselors who are not qualified? I mean, why would we not just say a school psychologist, social worker, or a counselor?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, that is a valid question. I suppose it's simply a qualifier, no pun intended.
Okay, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Tim, looking or school counselor, I'm not so sure that school counselor can do mental health. I think we have some prohibitions for what school staff people can do that don't have professional credentials. I think they're excluded from being able to do that. Now, there may be a school counselor that has a psychology degree, and I'm not talking about that person, but to say school counselor, I'm not so sure that that can be done. But I want to check that. Because we put some provisions here a few years ago that excluded, the school district personnel from getting involved in the health process of a student.
I think one of the concerns is putting the requirements on on smaller school districts and smaller schools that may not have a psychologist available and may not want to.
I appreciate that. I'm just saying that what we're prescribing here, I'm not sure we can do. Matter of fact, I think we're precluded from doing that. But anyway, getting past that, so I think we need to get a clarification on that, number one. Number two, there clearly is a cost factor to this. Is this in the fiscal note?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the fiscal note reflects the need or potential need for reading coaches that the Department of Education would provide and related resources to make as an option to districts.
Right.
This fiscal note does not speak to foundation formula funds that may very likely be needed as additional resources at a district level. That is not addressed in the fiscal note.
No. Okay.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Levy.
Through the chair, just a statement of the question. There's different types of counselors, and in most of your schools, especially your smaller schools, they're more along the lines of career counselors. They do your scheduling of classes, your credits, and so forth. And so many of those folks aren't trained for mental health approaches. The other question I have is, I'm just curious. It's a reading bill, and I've gone through the reading bill, and number four just seems to be something not necessarily associated with reading.
And page
Page 9, line 27, that mm-hmm. little section that Tim was talking about. I'm just curious as to why that was put in there.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, this legislation was modeled very closely to what was passed in Colorado. And so it was just sort of a catch-all. If there's my understanding of the intent anyway is if every student has different circumstances, and I won't begin to try to list them off. We could what if together or forever, but it's in instances where there's some unique circumstance for a student that may just need some extra help on the side that we're calling mental health, but just simple issues with having to do with growing up that may call for some extra assistance outside of an actual reading instructor. Now, one possible option that you may wish to consider here, if indeed you do feel it's just totally not germane to the subject of reading plans, is to simply strike section number 4, lines 27 to 29.
Thank you, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Senator Dunleavy's observation is a good one. I mean, the paragraph, I mean, quite frankly, should apply to a school. It doesn't matter whether it was detected in reading or math or English or whatever the case may be. So, I mean, I think his point's well taken. You might want to do it in a much more omnibus manner if we want to do that sort of prescriptive language. I mean, I'm assuming that's a bad thing to say around here, but that sort of thing is an expectation that exists within the system, I would hope. But in any event, but to have it just prescribed based on a reading program, that seems to be a little narrow-minded.
Thank you, Senator. We'll ask the department to reflect on that issue when they come up. Any further questions of Tim? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I received an email from, actually not a constituent, but somebody who teaches in my district, and she's specifically talking about this bill and says that scripted teaching to prevent reading deficiencies doesn't work and is precisely what this legislation will require districts to adopt. Now, I don't see that this the bill, underlying bill, requires scripted teaching. It requires a focused effort to meet the needs of a student who's not reaching grade level or at the goal. Do you have comments about that?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I guess I'm personally not an educator. I don't practice that field whatsoever, and I'm not really clear on what scripted teaching means, and I would have to defer to the department in that
regard. Okay, thank you.
And the term is scripted teaching?
Yes.
Okay, we'll ask the department that as well. Okay, further questions, Mr. Lampkin? Thank you so much, Senator Hutchins.
Yeah, Tim, since you're there, the paragraph above that, and I don't think you covered that, but it raised an interesting question in my mind when I read it, saying, has a high rating on most recent performance.
The line you're talking about, Senator Hutchins?
That's on line 25.
Okay.
On page 9.
Right.
You know, I guess my thought process was, what do we do with the teachers that have a low rating? I mean, which student deserves them? I mean, it begs the opposite question.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, it's my understanding that, first of all, this bill would have professional development for teachers with specific focus on reading instruction, and not all teachers are interested or perhaps have the aptitude for that particular niche of teaching. And so this would prescribe that if or when a student is under individualized reading plan, that the teachers that are administering those plans are highly rated. And if they are not highly rated, then I'm assuming that they would no longer be instructing students in that particular field. But and again, for clarification or detail, I would defer to the department.
Well, maybe I'm confused. I think I heard you say two different things. This is about evaluations, not about what your teacher rating is. It says has a high rating on most recent performance evaluation. That means that you as the principal look at me and say, Huggins, you're a lousy reading teacher, and which says if you follow this whenever practical, says you can't have me teach reading.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I'm assuming that at the department, at the district level, they should have prerogative to determine if a teacher is qualified to teach or not. But I could be mistaken.
No, I understand. My point is, high rating on evaluation doesn't have anything to do with what your qualification is. It's about your performance. But still, in the same token, it doesn't. In a broader sense, who gets the teachers that don't have high ratings? You don't have to answer that. It's just a good question for all of us to think about.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Huggins. Maybe we can ask the department again to reflect on that issue if they will. Mm-hmm. Further questions? Thank you so much. Yes, Senator Stebbin.
I would suggest Kodiak.
Kodiak what? Always a good suggestion. Thank you, Tim. Okay, let's go to the Department of Education and ask them if they can help us understand the issues that have been brought forward.
Yeah, I was getting too serious, Mr. Chairman. But Senator Huggins makes a very good point on when we think about this from the other angle.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to ask the department. Please identify yourself for the record.
For the record, Susan McCauley, Director of Teaching and Learning Support for the Department of Education Early Development.
Thank you, Dr. McCauley, for being with us again. Thoughts on the bill before us?
Perhaps talk first to the issue regarding previous testimony that these requirements already exist in regulation. There is in regulation, language that parallels the language in this bill. But as was stated, it applies, in fact, only to priority schools, not even to focus schools. Priority schools are one-star Title I schools. There are only 16 of them in the state. And the language in regulation that is specific only to those schools does parallel the bill, and it is that they must have 90 minutes per day of core reading instruction. They must have an additional time of at least 30 minutes per day of interventions in reading for students who are below grade level, grades K through 6. They need to be implementing a reading curriculum that addresses the essential elements of reading. They need to implement a reading program for students who are behind grade level in reading. They need to use a universal screening tool that is approved by the department at least 3 times a year. They need to use a diagnostic assessment to determine specific deficiencies. And finally, they need to base instruction and interventions on the specific needs of the student using data from the screening tool, a diagnostic assessment, and other assessments. So again, there is in regulation language that mirrors elements of this bill. It only applies currently to 16 schools in the state. So for the other nearly 500 schools in the state, and at the district level, there are no requirements currently for the elements of a reading program or student reading plans or meeting with parents regarding a student's performance in reading as is in the current bill language. So just thought it was important to clarify to whom that regulation language does apply.
Thank you. And a question from Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first is the focus schools. Are those the schools that were the subject of the lawsuit and we had a settlement on that, or are they identified differently?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, they are not those schools. The term priority and focus schools is a U.S. Department of Education. Those are U.S. Department of Education terms. All states are required to identify focus and priority schools. They must be Title I schools. And in Alaska, there are 16 priority schools and another 29 focus schools, for a total of 45 schools. But it doesn't have anything to do with the Moore lawsuit.
Thank you. And,
thank you. And another question, Senator.
My second question, does the department have a position on this legislation?
The legislation, through the chair, Senator Gardner, the legislation tracks very closely with research and best practices regarding early literacy. There certainly are a lot of different opinions in many areas of education regarding instruction, pedagogy, methodology, but in the area of reading and early literacy, the research is quite clear. It talks about a specific approach of attending to phonics, phonemic awareness, vocabulary, comprehension, and fluency. It talks about the use of screening assessments. Talks about the use of targeted, focused interventions early on before a student gets far behind and then is struggling in all areas of the curriculum because reading is required across the board in the curriculum. So, again, the nuances of this legislation, the fiscal potential fiscal implications are certainly yours to consider. From our perspective, the elements of this legislation track closely with research and best practices about reading in the early grades.
Thank you very much for the question, Senator.
Yes, thank you. So the email that I got that says please vote no on Senate Bill 107 and says script teaching to prevent reading deficiencies does not work, and that is precisely what this legislation will require districts to adopt. Does this require scripted teaching? I mean, does that mean something to you? And are we requiring that scripted teaching be adopted?
And maybe we get a definition of scripted teaching as well.
Right. And
through the chair, Senator Gardner, scripted teaching would be referring to under the general category of direct instruction, but under the general category of direct instruction, there is also a continuum. Direct instruction simply means that we are attending specifically to those 5 important areas of learning to read, that we are not, for example, attending only to comprehension without specifically and explicitly teaching phonics and phonemic awareness, things like letter names and sounds in kindergarten. Scripted teaching would be on, if there's a continuum under the broad umbrella of direct instruction, attending to those five specific areas, scripted teaching would be, the other way around, on the far end of that continuum. That would be a specific program, meaning a textbook, that specifically scripts out for a teacher what he or she should say. That's a specific methodology that is sometimes used, sometimes school-wide when there are very low levels of reading across the board, sometimes for small groups of students in a school. It's just very direct and scripted. I do not read that language in this legislation. What I read is what is advocated by research and best practice, and that is that when we are teaching young children to read, we should be attending in a research-based way to doing that. And that is by, again, focusing on those five: phonemic awareness, phonics, vocabulary, comprehension, and fluency. Whether or not one does that in a scripted or a non-scripted manner is not, in my opinion, prescribed by this legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Senator Huckins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thanks for clarifying the five areas. The legislation actually says including verbal skills and reading comprehension. It kind of goes on. Could you help us out with that part? And that's on page 9, line 9, where it goes, well, line 8 and 9.
Verbal skills. So the legislation is talking about, through the chair, Senator Huggins, attending as well. So we've got reading comprehension in there. So it is mentioning, it's specifically addressing the five, and then adding an area of verbal skills. So my read on this is that there is also attending to the area of speech. Interestingly, our new standards now include standards for speech, and they did not previously. So this is just adding that as an element of focus that I perceive as consistent with our state standards in early literacy.
Thank you, Senator Huggins.
Mr. Chairman, Susan, you mentioned, I think you said 16 schools for Title I, is that what you said, and there was 26 that were focus schools. Does that sound about right?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, 16 schools are priority schools.
Priority schools.
One star.
Title I.
Yes.
So could you give us some data on, I mean, you're essentially saying you're doing this program in those schools. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, schools are required, priority schools are required in their school improvement plans, which are required to address the elements that I read from regulation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be good for us to have the information about how that's working, and since we're already doing it. I mean, good, bad, or indifferent, so we get a little bit of feedback on what we're asking everybody else to do.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I would need to pull some information, qualitative or quantitative data, from those schools and provide you with that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Sedman?
On that subject, it would be nice, I think, to have it broken down rather than in aggregate.
Amalgamated, yeah.
Thank you. Yes, Sam Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just a couple of questions for Dr. McCauley. Finland supposedly has a higher literacy rate than the United States, or at least, it does. It's 100%. It's my understanding they don't actually begin to practice the decoding concept until the kids are what age? I believe it's 8 years of age.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, my understanding is that it's age 7.
7 years of age, okay. And in our country, generally speaking, and I think in our state, we move that down into the kindergarten, first grade, especially first grade. Is that correct?
through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, we begin teaching phonics and phonemic awareness in kindergarten.
When you read this bill, and if you put yourself in the place of a principal or even a teacher, what do you say to yourself in terms of you're supposed to remediate or you're supposed to address significant reading deficiencies or reading deficiencies? It's not really defined in here what a reading deficiency is in terms of a score on an assessment or a matrix, et cetera. So how would one go about doing that?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. As I mentioned when we first heard this bill, there are districts in Alaska that I believe have district reading programs in place that do mirror these what would be requirements. The way that they go about identifying a quote-unquote significant reading disability is first by setting benchmark expectations with regard to those screening assessments, meaning, just by way of example, what is the target for knowing letter names, the number of letter names or sounds a mid-year kindergartner should meet? When a student is not meeting those established benchmarks, then they do further assessment using a diagnostic. A screening assessment is typically a 1 to 3 minute quick assessment to see if a child's on track. If a child isn't, might be that there is a significant reading deficiency, might be that there isn't, and the child is just advancing a bit more slowly. So they would then do a diagnostic assessment, which is a more comprehensive assessment, again, for which there would be an established range of scores that potentially indicate a significant reading deficiency. So the point is that when these kinds of systems are in place, there are benchmark assessment scores that indicate the degree to which a student may be experiencing a significant reading disability. Typically, that is not left up to an individual teacher's judgment about that. There are system-wide approaches that are in place so that kids, if they're experiencing early literacy delays, that's identified quickly and intervention happens quickly.
Senator,
thank you. What about the aspect of simple reading readiness? I mean, it's a concept I've always believed had some validity, that some kids aren't developmentally ready, and my understanding is that boys tend to be a little bit later to be ready to do this kind of thing. So, for example, I have one of my kids didn't read at all until he was in third grade, didn't read at all, and he was very unhappy about that because he wanted to. It kind of wasn't there for him, and then it just fell into place. Now, kindergarten, he might have been assessed as being not up to snuff by these measurements. So is there any allowance for the idea of developmental readiness, and is that why third grade is where things come together for kids?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner. In my opinion and in my experience, good district-wide programs always take that into consideration. We're at the end of the day talking about children, and we're talking about little children, young children. So certainly we want some, again, I'm using this word a lot, but we want some systems in place so that children who are authentically struggling don't fall through the cracks, and we learn it when they score far below proficient on the third grade mandated assessment. However, within those systems, there should be and there are provisions or processes for teachers to discuss students. Many schools have, when districts are doing a good job with this, many schools have RTI, response to instruction, response to intervention teams. They meet on a regular basis, they review assessment results of students. They talk about other things that are going on with that student, talk about affective characteristics of the student, and then make good, sound decisions about what's best for that student. They're not going about this in a way that is simply looking at an assessment score on a piece of paper and then putting into motion something that happens with a student without considering whether or not that is best for a student. But the idea, again, within systems that do this well, the idea is that there are routine, dependable, guaranteed things that happen that will identify when a student is struggling, and that gradually then the conversation becomes, okay, what are we going to do about this? Should we do nothing? Wait, because we see incremental progress? Should we just not do nothing, but continue the regular course of instruction? Should we do a 15-minute pull-out with four other kids three times a week and really work on those letter sounds? Should we do an extra 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, because we're in third grade and the child is not progressing? But that's the kind of conversation that occurs by educators, by teachers, and includes teachers who know that student well. One other thing, this bill also requires communication with parents right away when there is evidence that a student may be struggling, and engaging that parent in conversation about what he or she thinks is best for the child. So the idea of developmental readiness and doing something intervention-wise that is good for that child should certainly be a part of any system that is really attending well to this issue of early literacy. And I don't see anything in the bill personally that precludes that from happening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Susan, I'm going to ask you to think a little more globally here for a second. Shining a bright light on an area of the curriculum, I think, is important. The techniques to do that, then we can debate that. We all have our opinions. But as I recall, when you look at our student assessments, I make this assumption that you can correlate writing skills with reading skills, that there is some carryover. But my recollection of when we look at how our students are performing, either in Alaska or nationally, math is the number one weakness. So it seems to me like we should have math programs sitting right here. I know that we as a society are more comfortable talking about reading, but why wouldn't math be sitting right here? Why don't we have the counterpart to what we're talking about? Because it's the weakest area of our curriculum.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, our performance in math as a state is lower than our performance in reading. One of the things that we have done recently to attend to that is adopt new English language arts and math standards. Our new math standards are much higher in terms of rigor than our previous standards. I won't say any more about that. So that is a statewide initiative, so to speak, that we have put in place in order to attend to some of our math performance. I don't disagree that they're both important. The issue with reading is that, potentially unlike math, when a child struggles with it, they will struggle across the board. There is no content area, likely, in which they won't if they're struggling with reading, because it is required across the curriculum.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I happen to agree with you, but I don't see it as either or. To be quite frank, and I don't know, I go to my good friend from the Anchorage School District, which he represents, and they had this program called Everyday Math. And when the parents discovered what Everyday Math was all about, it appeared to be, at least what I read in the newspaper, a minor uprising of why are we doing this. But I don't think you have Everyday Math any longer, as I recall.
That's correct.
I assume there's some new standards for reading in our new standards, right?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, there are.
Yeah, no, I understand. So, I guess I come from the school of thought of it's one thing to have standards, and here we're prescribing, more deliberate steps. And I would just ask us to think about, in areas that we have weaknesses, to look how we're going to attack those. And I mean attack them, not talk about them.
Right.
question.
Send down the right.
Through the chair, going back to page 9, line 24 through 26, would this law trump a negotiated agreement within a school? In other words, if there are agreements in the school that determine where a teacher is going to be placed, what they're teaching, et cetera, does this law trump that? In other words, if you've got a teacher, you're having a, I'm thinking of the practical implementation of the law. So you have a teacher, you're looking at their evaluation, and you come and you talk to them. How does one have that conversation where you're not sharing evaluation information with somebody else that's another teacher? In other words, why is teacher A now teaching reading? I've been teaching reading for 25 years, and now you have teacher A teaching reading. Why? You can't really have the discussion about the evaluation, the content of the evaluation. And you also may have a negotiated agreement issue, which may bump into this. So from your perspective, does this law trump those issues? In other words, I as a principal can say, oh, I really can't. Now I'm trying to do the best I can. I'm not playing a game here. I'm trying to understand how I can say to two teachers, I want to follow the law and I want to get the best teacher to teach reading to the kids. What are the practical bumps we may be looking at?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I don't believe that this trumps elements in a district's negotiated agreement. The way that I read this, and I put on my principal hat a bit and picture what I might do as a school principal in that reflects this language. So the words "whenever practicable" I think are very relevant. But second, to me it would look like if I have four third grade teachers and I have a reading intervention period of 30 minutes a day, five times a week, for students who are really struggling. This language would lead me to assign to teach that intervention group a teacher who has a high rating on his or her most recent performance evaluation and who possesses expertise in reading instruction. If one of those third grade teachers had a master's in reading and had a high performance evaluation, I think that would make my decision for me regarding who was going to teach that intervention class. There's nothing that's coming to my mind within a negotiated agreement provision that would disallow my, as a school principal, doing that. There are provisions, as you well know, in negotiated agreement regarding transfer and tenure and things like that. And I personally would view those as trumping this potentially rather than the other way around. But again, I believe those words, whenever practicable, leave some wiggle room, but the language also then provides some intent and some direction to a school principal when he or she does have autonomy to make decisions regarding who teaches whom.
Thanks.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Susan used an example, but, unfortunately, we can't assume a school that has three or four classrooms that you can choose from. I mean, we have that there are 10 kids or 20 kids. So, I mean, we have to look at the implications in different settings from high to low would be one part. I don't know. I'm certainly not an authority on what the standards are across the state. I have never heard of an approach where you can only teach this if you have your high rating on your last evaluation report. That's pretty micro in the sense that seems to be foreign language to anything I've ever read about who can do something and who can't do something. But your experience as a principal, have you ever been subjected to that?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I've not had either at the local district level, nor am I aware of other language in statute or regulation that talks about a link between a high performance rating and who should be teaching whom, which right. students. What is certainly discussed at districts is when principals are making decisions about teaching groups of students, there certainly is conversation about trying to match teacher expertise to particularly, frankly, in reading and in early literacy, during those early grades, teacher expertise with students who are struggling. There is a bit of a science. There's not a bit of a science. There's quite a lot of science regarding teaching reading to young children. And so there's certainly conversation at the district level about how to make that best happen. But I've not personally had at a district level with policy level words and statute or regulation, am I aware of language that does this otherwise?
So let me take it one step further. And I'm not trying to grill you. I'm just trying to make sure I understand what we're asking you to do if you were back as a principal. What do you do with a teacher that has the low performance rating? Is that as a principal, is that part of your consideration of where you put them?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, certainly there would be requirements regarding working with that teacher, developing a plan for improvement or professional growth. Those are required elements within a district's evaluation system. And while those are required elements, principals do have, within the bounds of highly qualified status and certification area, they do have frequently quite a bit of flexibility regarding the specific teaching assignment of a student, of a teacher. I'm thinking about an elementary and whether a teacher is going to teach, you know, even a small rural school, whether they're going to teach the multi-graded K-3 or multi-graded 4-5-6. The certification and highly qualified requirements would be mostly the same, and a principal would have discretion regarding the placement of that teacher.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy.
I think this may be the last question, but is there any compelling compelling component here that concerns you at all from a practical standpoint for many of our small rural schools that may have one teacher or two teachers and difficulty getting teachers to go there, stay there, but it may not be reading specialists or may not be, you know, well-versed in the strategies that are best practices? I would imagine that situation, they're going to rely on the one practical clause in this law. Is that how you see it as well?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, that is how I see it. I do think that in our smallest districts, this language would require some professional development support for teachers. And the what is required in this bill from the department would require us to provide support to those districts to help them ensure that their teachers are receiving that professional development support. So the language with regard to placement of teachers and whenever practicable, I do view that as pretty compelling language in those small rural situations, because the reality is that there may not be someone who possesses expertise in reading instruction at a one-teacher school teaching everything and 12 students.
Senator, just a quick note. In SB 100, there is a proficiency mandate within the ILP and the individual student performance. In that situation, when a student is found to be proficient, there's no issue. When they're found not to be proficient, and let's say it's in reading, that process would actually address this on an individual basis from my perspective. I'm just trying to I guess what I'm saying is I think in that particular process, the approach that SB 100 takes would be in compliance with this law.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, they are comparable in that they focus attention differently on students who are struggling. This bill talks about when a child is struggling, a school, a district needs to do this, and they need to do this, and they need to do this. And if a child is still struggling year two, they need to do and ramp it up a bit. Senate Bill 100 also talks about focusing attention and specifying in the student's ILP specific learning activities or goals on the areas where a student is struggling.
Thank you for the comments. Thank you very much, Dr. McCauley. I appreciate your time. Let's go to our public hearing. Open the public hearing. We have Posey Boggs from Anchorage. Ms. Boggs, are you with us?
Hi. How are you guys today?
Very good, thank you. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. My name is Posey Boggs, and I'm a parent, Alaska resident, volunteer for two literacy nonprofits, and a parent grassroots movement, Decoding Dyslexia. And I want to thank the committee for this conversation. And could I ask how long I have?
I'd say if you've got 3 minutes, we'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. First, referring to Senator Dunleavy's question about the Finnish education system and why they might wait until seven years old to start decoding instruction, sir, it is because the Finnish language has a one-to-one correspondence exactly between letters and sounds. And it's a much easier language to learn decoding skills in, as opposed to English, which is built of three or four other languages and is actually a much more difficult language to learn to read in. So I wanted to just give you that little bit of information, sir. The second thing is regarding Dr. McCulty. I think I just said her name incorrectly. I endorse everything she said about reading and the science of reading. You're very lucky, and Alaska's very lucky to have her in our education system. So to go to my testimony on SB 107, I'm extremely concerned about line 26 in the fact that the proposed language does not define explicitly a teacher who possesses expertise in reading instruction. I made a chart that compares the courses that I took as a UAA nursing student to the courses required for elementary education at UAA. I also could do it for my master's in educational diagnostician. I saw clearly that 48 credits in the nursing program either instructed in the knowledge and content required to do a physical assessment as applied to both healthy and unhealthy patients. In contrast, only two survey courses are required in reading instruction in the elementary education program, and they're very weak. The National Council of Teacher Quality rated the UAA courses as having little or no evidence of an adequate instruction on the scientific components of reading instruction. This is very concerning, and it's very similar across the whole United States. The education field has a systemic deficit, very similar to one that existed in the 1910 schools of medicine. Abraham Flexner in 1910 helped correct this medical student preparation by creating consistency across medical schools. Alaska cannot wait for the education field to undergo such a change. It would be an injustice for Alaskan children. We need, as Alaskans, to have the political will to enact legislation that would ensure our children are reading proficient. I would like line 26, page 9, to be revised and have it say, and teachers who possess expertise in reading instruction, as evidenced by passing a standalone licensure test of beginning reading instructional knowledge, for example, such as the Massachusetts Foundation of Reading test, with a passing score of 85%, to continue so that it will prove that our teachers have the foundational knowledge that is just required for the Tier 1 of a RTI system. And recently I heard audio files of how Alabama pulled all of their professional development funds together, and they focused on providing all of their current and upcoming teachers with the scientific training required to teach reading.
Thank you, Ms. Boggs. If you could sum up, please, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, sir. One more sentence. Yay. Alabama's improvement in fourth grade reading proficiency from 2003 to 2013 was 12% versus Alaska's negative 1% improvement, according to the Annie Casey Foundation. And I'm available for any questions.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Boggs. And if there's any comments you'd care to make that we haven't had time for, please supply them to us if you wouldn't mind just send them to us. Anybody else online for public hearing? Thank you. We'll close this public hearing. At this time, this bill will be held for further discussion. Is there anything further come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned.